This show was first broadcast on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM, thanks to New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, te whanau, nau mai, hoki mai. Welcome to another Frankly Friday on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. My name is Anne. Welcome.
Hey, we are here. Oh, I forgot to turn that off. But we're just going to stop that because we're going to hear that really soon. No, stop. Thank you. Right. Welcome. Welcome back to Frankly Friday, Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. How's your week been? Mine's been pretty good. We had a fantastic night last night at the studio, which I will tell you all about really soon. Excuse me. I'd just like to start this morning just tying in from last week's guest, Todd Valvin from, TEMO, Taranaki Emergency Management Office, previously known as Civil Defence. Following on from last week and talking about volcanoes and things like that, a CDEM, or Emergency Management Taranaki, have just launched this fantastic new website, well, fantastic new part of their original website, with some amazing infographics of our Maunga, of what will happen if, when, there's a 50% chance in the next 50 years, it does its dash, it does its thing. So check that out. I'd like to just advise everybody to have a look, and it gives you advice, it gives you infographics of things like ashfall, lahars, pyroclastic flows, which are fast-moving clouds of steam, debris and hot ash, avalanches, lava flows, gases, it looks at likely paths, it looks at likely impacts, and of course on the website you can find out things that you can do to help you be more prepared. So that website is cdemtaranaki.govt.nz/Taranaki Hazards. Or if you just, once you're on the website, search infographics or volcanic infographics and you'll find it. And that's just been launched, so it's well worth a look. Excuse me. Now, before I introduce my guest and talk about last night and talk about some of the fantastic things he's done, we're going to hear a song that you heard just a little snippet of when I started because I forgot to take it out of autoplay. That's okay, we all do that. End of a busy week. This is a particular request by our guest, and you'll find out who he is after this.
There was a time when men were kind, when their voices were soft, and their words inviting. There was a time when love was blind, and the world was a song, and the song was exciting. There was a time then it all went wrong. I dreamed a dream in time gone by, and hope was high and life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. I was young and unafraid, and dreams were made, used, wasted. There was no ransom to be paid, no song unsung, no wine untasted. The tigers come at night. their voice is soft as thunder as they tear your hope apart, as they turn your dream to shame.
That was Anne Hathaway, very emotional version of I Dreamed a Dream. Oops, sorry, Anne. There we go. I Dreamed a Dream from the movie of Les Mis. And that was a request, well, not that particular track, and I perhaps could have chosen a different one, but that's okay. I have in the studio with me a gentleman, and I mean that in every sense of the word, who has served Access Radio Taranaki for the last 12 years and has just retired from our board. And that was the evening that we had last night, was saying our thanks and best wishes to Lynn Bublitz. Welcome, Lynn, to the studio. First time you've been on our radio station.
Yes, I've watched it many times.
Hang on, what's going on there? I've got the wrong mic on. There we go, let's try that one. Yes, so welcome.
Thank you, and good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
And good morning to the listeners as well.
Absolutely.
What an emotional way to start the
Wasn't
day.
It?
But I think it's important because emotions do drive us, and expectations of those dreams drive us.
Absolutely.
And if we didn't have those, we wouldn't have many of the great things we have today.
Including Access Radio.
Including Access Radio.
Absolutely. Now tell me, I want to hear all about Lynn Bublitz today. This is your hour. This is your time. I want to find out who you are.
Well, that's lovely. I don't usually talk about myself because I always think there are far more important things around than just me. But I was born in New Plymouth and have been a resident really forever, except when I went off to university and to Teachers Training College. A number of points in that life really determined the steps I would take later. We lived on a small property at the end of Oriental Street, and Mum and Dad were keen gardeners, and we had a few sheep. We even milked cows. I used to get home from school and milk the cow, and of course did the lawns, and we were all part of the chores of a growing family.
How many siblings?
I've got two sisters, one older who still lives in New Plymouth, and a twin sister who lives in Calgary in Canada. She was to come over just after Christmas to celebrate our 80th birthday. But of course, COVID and all the restrictions around that meant that was impossible. And their lockdown procedures at times were far more intense than ours. So even though she has two daughters there and one here, they were imprisoned in their house for many, many months. However, let's hope that after the scare that we are now entering, that one day we can get back to normal and those associations can be reforged.
Yes, won't that be a good time?
That'll be a great time.
Yes.
So I went to Wellbourne School, and I must say my kids went to Wellbourne School and some of my grandchildren went to Wellbourne School. So we've been involved in that part of New Plymouth for a long time. And then I went off to New Plymouth Boys High School, and I think that experience changed my life in many ways. I was always interested in the idea of both teaching and horticulture. And I remember an interview with Sandy McNaught, who was the head at the time, and I said I wanted to be a teacher, and he said, I think you'd be far better being a horticulturalist. I don't know whether he was looking at me, a rather rotund young man, and thought he will never cope or what, I do not know. But during the 5 years there, I had some remarkable teachers. And the school at that time in the 50s was transitioning, I think, from a sort of warlike approach to the world to a more general and liberal approach. And those men who taught me, many of whom served in the war at the time, and I think their underlying thought and underlying philosophy was simply that every guy was equal and you could participate at any level in society. That's no doubt what they fought for. And I think when you're fighting a war and your best friends get shot, it makes a deep, lasting impression on you. And while I never spoke directly about the war, you remember Whit Alexander, who became head and one of my great mentors, I didn't realise that he'd carried a wound on his leg all the way from the war in he fought in the Middle East, in Egypt. And his wife had to dress that every day of his life. Now, you don't know these things, but they have enormous effect on the person. And Whit was a great mentor for me later on. He taught me English in the fifth form. And I wasn't particularly good at this language game. And as I said earlier, I was rather rotund. And with a wizened up smile, he said that I could play Hamlet's ghost. So that was an interesting part of my life then. So anyway, we sailed into the sixth form, and then at those days, year 12 now, of course, and biology took over, and good biology teachers drove that interest and reinforced my love of plants, which Mum and Dad had initiated. So I went off to university and studied botany and zoology too, I might add. And I was the first person in our family on either side to go to university. So it was a big, big step. Mum and Dad, of course, had grown up in a rural environment, and there was no secondary school for them at that stage. So they had looked after us all the way through school and really encouraged that, and I'm very grateful they did.
It's interesting, isn't it, how it, back then it wasn't the expected end point of your education, university. It was the exception, I think, rather than the rule. People were still recovering from like the post-war era still, wasn't
That's
it?
Right.
It was classed as. And they were interested, they just wanted to get out in the land and work it and produce things and keep the country moving. Again. Yeah.
Well, Mum was a dressmaker too, and she supplemented the family income. Dad worked at Cleland's in the yard there. And Mum assisted with dressmaking. It was interesting. When I went to university, my long trousers and sports coat were both made by my mother. So they were my best clothes, of course, and lasted many, many years. So university life was good, and I learned a lot. We went on lots of trips and saw lots of New Zealand and learned a lot about our forest. And I did an honours degree, and then because I had a post-primary teacher studentship, in those days the government paid your fees, all the fees, and gave us an allowance during those years at university. And that made it possible for me. We were bonded to teach for as many years as they had paid. And while many students didn't like this idea at all, I thought it was proper and reasonable. So I finished my training at Christchurch, and then I had to apply for a job. And it was a time when teachers were short and everybody was after you. So I had many inquiries, and one was from my old school. And Alaric Wilson was the head of science at the time, and I remember him encouraging me to go back to Boys High, which I did. And I never regretted it. I taught there for 25 years, led biology, because at that time we were in the middle of changes in our approach to subjects, and I was co-opted to assist in writing the curriculum for the senior biology. Ended up doing that at school most successfully, I think, and then got involved with administration. And so at a very early age, at 35, I became Deputy Headmaster of New Plymouth Boys High School, a role I held for 15 years. Jeff Crammond was the first head, and at a time of huge change. I remember at that time too, I was on the post-primary teachers executive, excuse me, and Helen Ryburn, who was the chair at the time, described secondary schools as beleaguered institutions, and indeed they were. The Vietnam War was on, and as a result, there were a whole lot of questions about the role of school in a modern age. And sometimes schools like traditional schools like Boys High did not quite fit that mould. Long hair, defiance, and then of course the scourge of the modern age began, and that was drugs. You know, they were almost non-existent when we grew up and when I was at university, and it was a huge change to see them becoming used by young men and women.
So this would have been in the 70s?
Yes, this was in the 70s. So the school had to learn to cope with a different clientele in many ways. Although I think the earlier ethos and the good discipline and procedures, and I don't mean discipline, I mean we had rules in which the kids had to keep within, and I think all good societies need rules, and if they're clearly defined and clearly accepted, the community accepts them as well, and I think they're still critical in good schools. In schools, and it makes schools good schools.
Those boundaries are really important, isn't it?
Knowing the boundaries.
Yep. And you're always going to get kids who try and push the boundaries, but so long as they're clear,
you always get them.
Yes.
And I hope we always do, because quite often pushing the boundaries leads to change.
Absolutely.
I often think in politics that the extremes, while we might rail against them at both ends of the spectrum, often push and change the middle where most of us are comfortable at.
Yes.
So that's what happens. So while at Boys High then, I introduced horticulture to the school curriculum and became very popular, and indeed throughout Taranaki it has become popular. In fact, there's more, percentage-wise, there's more kids in Taranaki taking horticulture than any other area in New Zealand. And I think that's important. And I helped write the prescriptions for and the curriculum for that subject while there. But I dreamed, of course, of one day running my own school, and thus that wonderful song at the beginning. I applied for a number of schools and, of course, was unsuccessful, including New Plymouth Boys High School when Tom Ryder got the job. I had been acting principal for a while, and I was disappointed in that, of course, but I think the right decision was made. So a few years later, of course, I applied for Inglewood. But during the interim between that, when I was deputy head at Boys High, I attended a meeting of the New Plymouth, it was at that stage, City Council. And it was a meeting at which the decision was made to build the carousel plant and properly treat sewage waste rather than just letting it flow out to sea. The alternative was a long exit out off the end of Elliot Street. And the debate was held, and I listened. I was in the council chamber when that debate was held. And finally, by one vote, it was decided that we would have a carousel plant. It was led by, the debate was led by the then mayor, Daisy Lean, a young man, who had who was elected because that's what he believed in. And the one person in the council changed their mind, and that changed the whole way in which New Plymouth dealt with its waste. And that was the deputy mayor at the time, Ron Barclay. So, not sorry, it wasn't Ron. No, I say that's not correct. It was... name escapes me at the moment, but that person changed his mind, and so we now have a carousel plant. But that was only the beginning of many changes. I talked to Tom Ryder, who was the head of Boys High, and he talked to the board, and they allowed me to stand for the council. So in 1982 I was elected to the New Plymouth District Council.
That seems like a really good place, yeah, just to have a little break, give your voice a rest.
Good.
And we'll have your next choice of song. And yeah.
Can I just finish with that, the story about that, with that song?
Absolutely.
Because it's important, really.
Yes.
So, you know, I had this dream of becoming a head, and I applied for Inglewood High School and was appointed. And I remember... about that time, whether it was just trying to think last night whether it was before or after I was appointed, I went to school in the evening, and the local group were practicing for a performance in the town, and the girl was singing that song. So that made it important in my mind, and really crystallised the very point that this was where I should be, running this school, Inglewood High School.
See, dreams really do come true. So keep dreaming those dreams. And we're going to have a listen now to Louis Armstrong singing What a Wonderful World, and it certainly feels like that this morning.
I see trees of green, I see them bloom, for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the skies, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying, I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Louis. What a wonderful world indeed it is. So this is Access Radio Taranaki, in case you were wondering. 104.4 FM. My name is Anne and you're listening to Frankly Friday, and my very eloquent guest this morning is Lynn Bublitz, one of our founding trustee members who has just retired from our board, and we're very, very sad to see him go, but I'm taking this opportunity to get to know a little bit more about our Lynn, who everybody, I think, in New Plymouth and Taranaki has had some kind of contact with over the years. And in Lynn's story, he's just got up to taking over his own school, fulfilling his dream of having his own school at Inglewood, and just venturing into the council. Let's hear what happens next.
Thank you. What a great song, that one that Louis sings.
Isn't that beautiful?
I've actually seen Louis perform. When I was at university, he came to Wellington. And the first half of the concert was taken by Trini Lopez, and some of the listeners will remember his song. And then after the intermission, this small man, I was astounded, came onto the stage with his trumpet and his white handkerchief and a glass. I presume it had water in. I think if you play a trumpet, you need to keep your lips moist. Anyway, he played all the ones that we know, When the Saints, and then the hit of the day was Hello Dolly. Well, he played that, and the audience stood up and stood for the remainder of his concert. That's how great that man was in generating an interest in his audience. It was just a wonderful experience. But I also told you earlier about the Vietnam War and its influence on society in New Zealand. And I remember going to the film Good Morning Vietnam, and that song was the theme song of that film. And remember John Stewart saying to me, you know, America's lost in Vietnam, but they've won the war in every film since. And I think he was spot on. Anyway, after appointing to Inglewood, they said I should remain on the council, and which I did. So I had the council's job and running a school at the same time. I had no spare minutes at all. And I must say that during that period and the whole of the life, I've had a wonderful wife. Robin has kept the family stable, so we never seemed to have any ups and downs. It was something that I think gave me the time and allowed all my energies to be directed to the work at hand. The school was good and made good progress in those years. We worked well, the board and the staff, and I just enjoyed the contact with the kids and the progress they made. I used to say to them that it didn't matter which school they went to, thinking back to that early philosophy, that when they achieved a pass at university level, university entrance level, at school certificates, which was there in those days, that was as good as anyone would get anyway, anywhere in the country. The Inglewood kids were as good as any in the country, and indeed they are, and I still meet those students. But during the time on the council too, a number of things changed too. We developed from best sewage system in the country to stadiums to redeveloping of the Opera House, now the Showplace, redevelopment of the bowl, the establishment of the walkway, and of course I chaired the committee which established Pukeariki, and that I think was my best step on the council. I also chaired the iwi liaison committee and also to the international committee, and we established sister cities in Mishima and in Kunming, and our school, Inglewood High School, established connections in both those places. And I think the students involved really appreciated that. So we move on. And then when I retired from Inglewood High School, I became deputy mayor under Peter Tennant. And the town continued to develop. And I remember one councillor once said, you know, when you visit a town, you don't go to see the roads. You expect the water to come when you turn on the tap, but that's not what you go there for. You go to see what's at the end of the road. And when you think of New Plymouth, it's the things at the end of the road that make it different and make it important. You know, you think of things like Pukeariki, you think of things like the Gavette Brewster Art Gallery, which can be controversial at times, but that's good. You think of places like Pukekura Park, you think of the walkway, you think of the Bowl of Brooklands, you think of the Yarrow Stadium. All of those things were added to or developed during those years that I was on the council. And I think what made it more important to me is that when you run a school and you're in assembly looking out over either the 1,000 boys who were at New Plymouth Boys High School or the 470 that were at Inglewood High School, you think, what are these young men and women going to do when they leave school? So you need a vibrant town so that there's plenty of employment around. But you always have those that never quite make it or have difficulty in making it. And that's really, when I say making it, I mean to be able to have a good, stable and happy life. The pursuit of happiness is an ideal that we often all follow. And it's not to have a party on Friday. That's not what happiness is. happiness is marked by good friends, good family, and a good and satisfying job. And there are many of those. That's the pursuit of happiness that I would hope that everyone can follow and be part of. So when we get to a little time on, after 12 years ago actually, I was telephoned, and I'd been involved in many things, and I'll talk about those later. I was asked if I would join the board of Access Radio, which was about to begin. Daniel Keeley was the organiser of that. And I thought, why? I'm not interested in radio. I've never participated in any aspect of that. But they assured me that my involvement in the wide range of other things might help. So I did join and have been there for 12 years and watched an idea, again, an idea, a dream grow and flourish, because people had the energy to follow that dream and put the effort in that was needed. And when you look at an organisation like Access Radio, which exists without commercial backing, it requires to go to the community to ask for money to assist it. So what was its purpose? And its purpose was to give voice to the ordinary people who might miss out in other spheres of communication. And it has done that with the various programs that have been organised over the years. It's funded by by New Zealand On Air with a grant, but we could not survive on that grant. And we rely on, like so many things in Taranaki, on the TSB Community Trust, now TOI, and that trust supports Access Radio and has supported it right from the beginning. But then various other trusts have also helped over the years. And for people to run a segment, they are required to give a small donation. I think it's $15, is it?
It's 20 for half an hour, yes.
Yeah, 25 for half an hour, which is pretty small. But even that's difficult for some groups. And so the TSB Community Trust money helps subsidise that to give voice to these groups. And that includes school groups. It includes language groups with part of our community that come from different countries. It includes music groups, discussion groups, a range of things which are of interest to a broad group of people. We've even got a caravan that whips around the mountain and gets involved in community activities there. And we always do it on a shoestring. And there were three components and a number of people who should be thanked for this radio. Graham Beals to start with, who was the first chair. Daniel, who I've always also mentioned. The people who do the physical work of the technician's role, critical to broadcasting. So many people gave their time for nothing, gave their expertise for just a limited amount, but it was necessary to start it. We first had the station up on Windy Point in an old building which we leased from Cordia for nothing, and they finally decided that they should sell that. Thank goodness we didn't buy it. It was just a mass of trouble, and we've ended up down here. And at that stage, Daniel had died and Alexandra had taken over the role of manager of the station, and she performed well. But we didn't call it manager. We called it, what did we call that role?
Yeah, she was station. Oh, she was the creative manager.
Creative manager. Yes. And that summed her up very well, because you needed somebody to do the other management activities, the staffing, the report writing, all the things that are necessary. And Anne, who's presently the station manager, had that role. So they were key people in it. Excuse me. They were key people in the whole running of this place, and they still are. Anne particularly, who now is the station manager, and I think is doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
But we couldn't have done that without the consistent help of financial expertise, which has been given by Grant Hassell, who's busily at the moment writing reviews on the women's bowls, which are in town. Grant's role has been pivotal in ensuring that we have enough money at any one time to pay the outgoings that always arise. And his husbandry of that resource has been mighty. Wouldn't have existed without him. So there's Access Radio, but it was only one thing that I got involved with.
You've been on lots of boards.
Yeah, I was involved with Pukeiti, have been forever, and negotiated the change from a trust to the ownership by the TRC, a great change. And Pukeiti, as you all well know, has a world-renowned collection of rhododendrons, and the trust now has a partnership with the TRC, and our role is to keep an eye on that collection and to ensure that we expand it. I was going to use the word grow it, but that sounds a bit punish. So expand it and keep it vibrant and keep it known as one of the best in the world. We're lucky as a community to have Pukeiti and to have the TRC running it. I've told you a little bit about Pukeariki, which was the whole implementation of that was great. I'm now presently involved with the L.A. Alexander Trust and chair that trust, and we distribute about $250,000 a year to students of Ag and Hort who are studying courses at tertiary institutions, and also assist Massey University in some research work in which will have an implication for Taranaki agriculture. That is a great organisation, and we're going to expand its operation in the future. One of its jobs has also been to fund capital works at schools, providing glasshouses, shearing things, and other aspects needed to teach the students in their course. I said earlier that we've got a high proportion of horticultural, agricultural students in Taranaki. One of the reasons for that is the work that the Trust has done in supporting it. So there are one or two things which I have done over my life, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. But as I say, right from the start, you've got to have the dreams, you've got it, and then have the effort to build on those dreams. And I think if you do them well, a whole lot of people can gain from it. Thank you.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's been lovely hearing about your life. But tell me, this gardening and horticulture and the love of plants that has been a constant thread all the way through everything that you've done, isn't it? And it's still very much there.
They have been. And all the way through, right from a kid.
So would you say that's your passion?
Yes, it is a passion. It is a passion. And it's never ending. It's never ending. When I was a boy, Dad built me a glasshouse and I collected cacti. And I had a great collection of cactuses. Still got a few now. But that was the beginning of a very close interest in growing and nurturing plants. And then Dad also used to take me out possum hunting, and he knew all the native trees, so I learned all those too as a child. So all of that, and then Mum grew cut flowers at one stage, had a lovely flower garden, and so I'd help her. So I grew up with plants, and they're still with me.
That's wonderful.
And one of the great things, I've travelled a fair bit too, and one of the great joys is finding, growing in the wild, plants that you nurture in your own garden. And this has happened particularly in China, which I've been to a number of times. You drive along the road and there are the plants that you nurture at home, growing alongside the road like our weeds.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, and when you go into the hills and see hillsides covered in rhododendrons, because you must remember the rhododendrons in the Himalayas are like heather in Scotland. They're everywhere on the hills. And you get a hillside covered in these with other plants as well. But that's a great joy. So they've given me a lot of satisfaction. And they still do. Last night I was given, as a thank you to the work I've done, a little book on the development of the palm house at Kew, which I visited a number of times. And I might add that in the temperate house at Kew, they grow a number of New Zealand natives, including titoki. And why have I mentioned that? Because Graham Smith, who was the curator at Pukeiti, on various roles for nearly 40 years. One of the reasons he came to New Zealand was one day working at Kew, he found these berries on the soil and they were fallen out of the tree and they were titoki berries. So that really started an interest in
and
this
New
country.
Zealand, yeah.
And Pukeiti today, the collection at Pukeiti, is really the result of his dream and his work.
Dreams and gardening.
Dreams and gardening.
Yeah, this is my life. It's been wonderful having you in, Lynn. It's we're getting close to the end, but we do have your last bit of music, and I've been madly trying while you were talking to get a reduced version of it. We're going to have a little bit of Mozart's clarinet concerto. I did try to cut it back to just the second movement. I'm not quite sure where we're at with it. So we won't play the whole thing because it's 29...
No, you won't. No, you'll all be asleep.
29 minutes long.
No. But why I've chosen this is that I think it's calming. But the important thing is that it was part of another film we saw called Out of Africa. And Out of Africa, that wonderful story of Blixen, also showed what happens when one group of society really has more than another. And the awful result of that was, of course, all the trouble in Kenya all those years ago. And everywhere else. And we've always got to ensure that when the society moves on, that we all move on together, that it doesn't leave us with two groups. So when I listen to this piece of music, that's what I think of, that we must all move together forward in one direction. And that doesn't mean to say we don't need to have different sets of opinions and different ideas. But if we're going to make progress, we've all got to work together. And I'm glad that we in this country are endeavouring to do that right now. So thank you.
Exactly. It's very pertinent because the current
situation. And this radio plays an important part in that.
Thank you. Yes, we try. We try. But so let's have a little bit of Mozart's concerto. In fact, no, we'll come back and we will say goodbye to our lovely guest. But let's have a listen first.
Soothing, isn't it?
Isn't that beautiful? That is just so beautiful.
But,
it's just
you know, when you listen to an orchestral piece, you realise that it's not just one person, it's a team playing absolutely together. You imagine if you were playing that clarinet and made a mistake. You have to start again, not just you, but the 20 or 30 other people that are there playing with you. And so, again, teamwork is important in anything
Absolutely
that you
is.
Do. And if the team's all working together, you make progress, just as this radio has done. And I know it's going to continue to do that in the future too.
Thank you. Now, I don't know about you at home, but while that piece of music was playing, I had this incredible vision of Lynn in his greenhouse with that coming through some speakers somewhere and dancing around the greenhouse. I just... It's a lovely vision, and I'm going to keep that with me all day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking so freely of your life and giving so freely of yourself throughout your life. You have been a pillar of New Plymouth society and New Plymouth development, and I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your contribution to our beautiful city.
Thank you, Anne.
And, yeah.
Thank you, Anne. And just one thing.
Absolutely.
I think, as Anne has done and so many people that you know, you owe your talents to the community in which you serve. And if we all give those talents, we can make great progress, and it doesn't matter in what field. Thank you.
Thank you. And just before we go, I'd like to acknowledge another beautiful person in your life who you have talked about just a little bit, not quite as... I wanted some more stories about life with... Robin, the lovely Robin, who was here last night and thoroughly enjoyed herself. Thank you, Robin, for giving us your husband.
Yeah, thank you, all right.
Yeah.
You've provided the rock for all of this. And our wonderful kids too, and I haven't talked about them, but they've given us great joy, and our grandchildren now. So we've been indeed blessed and lucky.
I think you might have earned that one.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for listening today, everyone, and the weekend is just around the corner. Go out there and enjoy that sunshine, just while we still have those freedoms to be able to do that. And yeah, rejuvenate and come back next week. We'll be here next week. We'll be here over the weekend too. Access Radio, Taranaki 104.4 FM. Have a great rest of the day. Ka kite anō.
This show was first broadcast on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM, thanks to New Zealand On Air.